I am not an electronic preacher, nor am I an artist with PowerPoint. So it's just going to be some plain old pictures tonight, except I did animate this slide, which you'll see in just a minute. Before I begin my presentation, I want to tell you how pleased Pat and I have been to be here, to enjoy your company and your fellowship, and to participate in our singing and praying and worshiping together. People have asked me a lot of times, you know, about the work that you're doing. Well, that's okay, but actually it's our work. We are partners, that you are providing some very essential support for me. Without your support, I could not do what I do. And so this is a very pleasant partnership, and I appreciate very much the financial and the spiritual fellowship and partnership that is a part of our relationship. Now, I noticed Don almost cracked a smile when he said this was the last service tonight. Well, I have to say, Pat and I are anxious to get home. I've really only been home one day in the last month, so I'm kind of anxious to get home myself. But all in all, this has been such a pleasant respite from the travel back and forth, and being with you has been a real pleasure. I want to tell you two things about this slide. Number one, this statement, "Go and do the same," is taken out of context. I don't ordinarily do that, but I have a reason for doing that, because this little saying, "Go and do likewise," or the older version would say, "Go and do thou likewise," it's sort of a challenge. This statement comes from the end of the story that Jesus tells about the man who had gone down from Jerusalem to Jericho, fell among robbers, etc., etc., and this good old Samaritan man came and rescued him. And when asked about, you know, who is my neighbor, and, well, the one who really did the help, the man that provided relief. And Jesus then said, "Go and do the same." But I want to say that I'm going to apply this to our series this half week about evangelization and teaching. Go and do the same. The second point I want to make is, I think, integrally related to this, and that is that I do not personally believe that I am under the umbrella of Matthew 28, verses 19 and 20. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. Every creature. Well, that's Mark 16, but Matthew says, "Go and make disciples of all the nations." I don't think that applies to me. And I'll tell you why. When you study the Bible or when you interpret any kind of literature or language, you always ask three questions. Number one, who is speaking? Number two, to whom are they speaking? And number three, what did they say? And if you answer those questions, then you see that Jesus is speaking to the apostles. And he's giving them their orders to go and to teach all nations and to convert as many people as they can. Now, that does not mean that we are under no obligations to sort of propagate our faith and confidence in the Scripture. I made that point to say that oftentimes when people say, "Well, Matthew 28, 19 and 20 are our marching orders," I think that's the apostles' marching orders. We live 2,000 years later, and we still face the same challenges. In some ways, we face greater challenges, because there are approximately, I'm trying to get these numbers straight tonight, I'm dyslexic about mathematics, 6.8 billion people in the world. That is an estimate of the world's population in 2021. It's a lot of people. The interesting thing is that the great bulk of those people live in two places. They live in India and they live in China. And so you can see that there is a challenge that is set before the saints of today to see to it that every person that can possibly reach will have an opportunity to say yes or no. Either yes, I will, or I'm not interested. And that's our challenge tonight. Go and do the same. Now, I have to tell you that you don't have to go to India. You don't have to go to China. You don't have to go to Myanmar. You don't have to go anywhere. Because the greatest challenge, the greatest evangelistic challenge, is right outside our front door. And that's where we're going to leave it. Because I've got a lot of information to give you tonight. Some of it you may be interested in. Try not to nod off on some of them, because some of them are rather mundane. But I have some interesting stories to tell you, and this is not a travelogue. I'm not trying to promote any particular country or any particular place. But I want to tell you about some of the places where I have been in the last few years to teach the Bible, and I'm very privileged to do that. This is an old picture. In 1997... Pat and I moved to the capital of the Slovak Republic. The capital is Bratislava, Slovakia. We met some of these people. And these guys, this man is now dead. His name is Mike Morrow. This is Jan Foyt. And these are people, some of whom we met for worship every Sunday. This is not a church picture, because these individuals were parts of churches located in various parts of either the Czech Republic or the Slovak Republic. But they're Christians. And the reason they're Christians is that somebody, somewhere, at some time, either handed them a Bible, and I'm convinced that you can learn on your own from the Bible what to do to be saved. You don't have to have someone tell you. Or else someone has taught them. Now, if I could doctor these slides today and show you how they look today, you probably would not recognize them. But most all of them are still alive. And as far as I know, most all of them are still faithfully serving the Lord. And that says something. It says something about the power that is contained in the words in your scriptures and my scriptures about how we can live today and how we can look forward to eternity. Well, that's old business. This is a more recent picture. And I'm going to start way off in the east. This picture was taken in a country that used to be called Ceylon. And if you drink much tea, you will find oftentimes that you're drinking Ceylon tea. But the country of Ceylon does not exist anymore. It's now called Sri Lanka. But this country is located on a very small island off the southeast coast of India. It's a very beautiful island, sort of shaped like a teardrop. And I began going to Sri Lanka in about 1991 or 1992. This man right here is named Joe Manaparuma. Joe, like many Sri Lankans, left home to go work in another place. He went to Saudi Arabia. He was what we would call a houseboy. He called himself a houseboy. So I'm not using that derogatorily. And during the Gulf War, the family with whom he was working got orders to evacuate Saudi Arabia and come back to the U.S. They took Joe with them. Now, at that point in time, Joe was a Pentecostal, and Joe had dreadlocks. He didn't look like this Joe. Somehow or other, Joe got in contact with our brethren. He attended a gospel meeting. I think Bob Buchanan was preaching in that meeting, and I think the subject was Satanism. Joe began to study his Bible, and he became a Christian. He went back to his country later, joined his wife and his family, and began teaching the Bible. I began working with Joe within a few years of that time. And I think I have been to Sri Lanka every year since then, except for this year, or this past year, and that was due to the pandemic. There are a number of Christians in Sri Lanka, but congregations are very, very small, and for the most part, there will be preachers that will maybe working with several different congregations at the same time. because there is a shortage of men who teach the Bible. But there are Christians there who follow the same Bible that you follow. They just read it in a different language. There are basically two languages, Sinhalese and Tamil. Tamil comes from India. Sinhalese comes from the native islanders themselves. So these are some of the Christians there. Now this man, this is Ken Chapman, and Ken was preaching at the Helton Drive Church in Florence, Alabama, where Pat and I were members, and this was Ken's first trip out of the United States, and it was an eye-opener for him. You cannot tell from this picture, but we're up in the central part of the country, which is up in the highlands. That's where all the tea is grown. It's very beautiful, but getting there is a real challenge. It's at least a six-hour drive by van, and it's on these little cutback roads, and so you just really want to close your eyes when you get in the van until you get to where you're going. But here we are, and I think it was on this trip that these young men, we were teaching Bible classes, and they all had their little certificates that they had completed their course. This is where the church meets, by the way. And the man who lives in this house, let's see, I think this is Nagendran right here. Nagendran, I've known since he was in high school. I performed his wedding ceremony, so we've been friends for a long, long time. There is a church that meets in his house. He doesn't live in the same house now. He lives in a different house. But isn't it interesting? There are lots of places in this world where meeting in a building like this is out of the question. In fact, it would be dreamland for them. Most of them meet in places that are much, much more humble than this place. And I'm not being critical, don't misunderstand me. But the point I'm making is that many of our brethren live in circumstances that are very much different from ours. But we believe in the same Savior, we have the same Bible, and we essentially do basically the same things on the Lord's Day when we come together. We sing and we pray. We study the Bible together. Isn't that what we all do? That's worldwide. That's part of the system. And these are some of the little children. I think that the Indian children and Sri Lanka children are the most beautiful children in the world. Now, you may not agree with that, and whether you do or not, that's not really important. But I thought this was kind of interesting. You see this little fellow's logo on his, I am not fat. Well, he certainly is, because this is Nagendran's oldest son, and he is a big, big man by now. And I think all of Nagendran's children have become Christians. We have been meeting, this is a group of preachers, and we are meeting in the hotel where I'm staying. This is going to be, I think we hung a sheet up here because there's no such thing as a screen. So we hung a sheet up here, and I would use my projector and we would follow along. But this presented sort of a unique challenge because there are brothers here who cannot understand each other. Some of them speak Sinhalese and some of them speak Tamil. Now, some of them can speak both languages. But the challenge was that I had to have my remarks interpreted twice, once from English to Tamil, and then from Tamil to Sinhalese. So that was sort of a cumbersome process. But somehow or other, we got our work done, and I think that we met for 4 days, and we studied various Bible subjects. It's really important that these types of meetings take place. I really prefer working with the preachers. Now, that sounds a little bit maybe hoity-toity, and I don't mean it that way. But the fact is that working with preachers gives you the opportunity to explore some subjects that are important to them that perhaps other people may not have as much of an interest in. But when the preachers become educated, then they can better teach their colleagues and their own people than I can. Now, it is true that often people will come to listen to a foreigner when they won't come to listen to a native person. But that's only superficial. The day-to-day work and teaching is better done by the native preachers. And so I try to concentrate particularly in working with preachers, not exclusively, but on every trip I try very hard to devote 2 or 3 or 4 days into working with these men. And generally we'll start around 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And if you're in Sri Lanka, you take a tea break at 11. Then you have a lunch, and then we will meet in the afternoon until about 4 o'clock. Sometimes there will be an evening, go out in the evening and work. Now, this is a tuk-tuk. This is our transportation. Ken is a big guy, if you noticed in the picture. So it was really kind of hard for both of us to fit in this tuk-tuk, but this is a very, very common form of transportation. The other form of transportation is a bus, and you don't want to ride the bus because, generally speaking, you're in the bus packed like sardines. At least you've got a little bit of space in this tuk-tuk. The problem is the tuk-tuk does not go very fast, but the roads are so bad you don't want to go very fast anyhow. This picture was taken in Singapore. Singapore is sort of an unusual place in many respects. It's the cleanest city in the world by their own admission and by my admission. There's no place quite like Singapore. There are a number of churches in Singapore. Singapore basically is populated by Chinese, by Malaysians, and by Indians. And there will be churches that generally are sort of populated by those people. This happened to be sort of a Chinese church. And not all of the people there were Chinese, but their services were conducted in English. They invited me to speak on several occasions. Unfortunately, not anymore. But I've been there, and there are a number of American brethren who often are assigned to go to Singapore and work for maybe a few years. So there are always American people there. And interestingly enough, there is a young, she's not young, as young as she used to be, but she was converted in Humble. She is a Mexican with a Japanese surname. It just so happens that her grandparents immigrated to Mexico from Japan, so she is a Japanese Mexican, and she's living in Singapore. But she became a Christian before she left Houston. I think she was converted in Humble. She married a Norwegian, and they live in Singapore. She is a Christian, he is not. And she has been my contact in Singapore for a number of years. So this is a very challenging city. It is a city that is dominated by young people, and a city that is, like Athens, is a very religious city. The problem is most anything goes in religion. You have all kinds. You have Hindus, you have Confucianism, you have all sorts of religions, including what some people would call Christianity. But there is a challenge here, and I believe that a good American brother and sister could do some good by living in Singapore and working among those people. It's not for me, but at the same time, it is a place that has a definite challenge. This picture was taken in what I believe is one of the most fertile countries for teaching the gospel. This is in the Philippines. Now, I call this thing a three-wheeler, and you can't tell, but that's me in there. And there is a driver right here. And there's a guy up here. I have seen as many as 7 people on this thing. This is a very common form of transportation, and the fellow who is driving is named June Leusa. When I moved to Franklin County, I worked with a small church out in the county, and those brethren were supporting June. And it just so happened, I think, when I was coming back from India or someplace, that I came back through the Philippines and spent maybe a week or so with June and his family and worked with him. And there are numerous churches in the Philippines. The second time I went to the Philippines a few years later, I was there for 2 weeks, and I think there were 44 baptisms. I think that it would be highly unusual to spend a week or two in the Philippines and not baptize at least 20 or 30 people. There are churches everywhere. They are usually fairly small. But those brothers, it appears to me, work hard at evangelizing, and much of their work and the success for their work is due to radio. Now, radio is passé here. Maybe YouTube is better, but radio in some parts of the world is still a primary form of transmitting the gospel. It is in the Philippines, and it is in some parts of Africa. So I'm in the Philippines. The only thing I don't like about the Philippines is you will sweat to death. It is hot. I think this was sometime in December. And one of the oddities is I was there over Christmas and I was sweating profusely listening to Jingle Bells. This is another form of transportation because the Philippines are made up of numerous islands. And in this case, we were going out to a little island where they make salt. They take this briny water, they put it in evaporation pits, and working there is almost literally in the pits because you're separated, you're off on this little island, but there was a church on this island. So June and I and a couple of other brothers are going to get in this little old doodad right here, and we're going to, And we're going to go off on one of those islands. It just so happened that there were three people who were baptized on that particular day. So I'm suggesting to you that there are many places in this world where there are still people who are interested in studying the Bible, and that you can be assured that if you will spend some time and try to teach clearly, that there will be responses to the truth. Now, don't misunderstand. That doesn't mean people will always say yes, because making a decision to say no is still a decision. They've made a choice. Some say yes, some say no. But my judgment is that in the Philippines is one of the most fertile fields at teaching the Word of God. Now then, this picture was taken in an unfinished house that is owned by a man by the name of Robert Sanusi. I met Robert, I think, in the 1980s, initially. He was an accountant. He worked for the government, and the government sent him to the University of Kentucky to further his education. While he was in Kentucky, he became a Christian. He came back to Indonesia. He lives on the island of Java. And we began corresponding. And I visited with Robert and his wife. Robert had two sons. He, his wife, and his two sons became Christians. Robert worked for a university, and the university's name is Maranatha University. So you can guess that it is religiously connected. Robert did not accept their doctrine, but he taught in their school system. And I was invited to speak there, which I did with fear and trembling, but nobody beheaded me. I still came away with my head. But it was an interesting situation. Well, through the years, Robert and I have maintained contact with each other. This picture, I think, was taken 2 years ago. And Jeff Archer was with me on this trip, although Jeff is not in this picture. There are several interesting things that took place on that trip, but one of them had to do with Robert had been to the Holy Land. He had visited Jerusalem, and he had brought back some wine from Jerusalem, and he insisted on having that in the Lord's Supper because the wine came from Jerusalem. Now, it's not important that we focus on the fact that it was wine, but to Robert, that had special significance because it came from the place where Jesus was. Robert, since that time, has developed either dementia or Alzheimer's, unfortunately. I don't think either of his sons is faithful. But the fact is that within this environment, it was an amazing thing that here was a man who, just because of his government sending him away to school, came in contact with the Word of God, became a Christian, and took that back home with him and taught his family. Well, the interesting thing about this is that Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world. You are surrounded by Muslims. Now, don't get upset, because these are generally very peaceful people. They're not people who are going to chop your head off. But nevertheless, you are surrounded by Muslim influence. So for a person to become a Christian within that environment is really an interesting and important thing, because the gospel can be effective anywhere in any culture if there are believers in the Word of God. Well, this picture was taken in what country used to be called Burma. It is now called Myanmar. And oddly enough, there is a Bible Belt in Myanmar. Now, this is a Buddhist pagoda. And everywhere you go in Myanmar, you will find these things. They are everywhere. They are ubiquitous, because these are reminders of their religion. It is a Buddhist country. But I'm going to go up to the north and meet with some people and work in this area for a couple of weeks. And there are many, many churches in that area. I don't mean churches of the Lord, but there are many denominational churches. And there are also some Christians. I was able to do some things in Myanmar that I would never be able to do in America. The man that I was working with told me that we have an opportunity here to meet with a Pentecostal church. They have invited you to come for 2 days. You can speak on whatever subject you want to speak. I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Yes." And so we got on his motorcycle, and I've got some pictures. I don't have pictures of me on his motorcycle, but I got some motorcycle pictures. So we got on his motorcycle, and we went out to this place, which was about an hour from where we were staying. I started at 10 o'clock. We had a break for lunch, and I stopped at 4 o'clock on the first day. The second day was a repeat of the first. We always have a question-answer period. And as you might think, there was sort of a lively question and answer period. I don't know that anybody was converted. But have you ever heard of a teacher of the gospel going into a Pentecostal church at their invitation, being given free rein to teach what you believe the Bible teaches without any interference? I found that highly interesting. The bad thing about this is that in February, there was a military coup in Myanmar. And unfortunately, there have been a number of deaths attributed to that coup, because the people of Myanmar reject the military leadership. And so it is impossible for people like me or anyone else to enter that country and to teach the gospel. There are brethren there who are suffering because of this coup, and I know that they would appreciate your prayers. This is an interior of a house where most of the teaching takes place. Now, there are a couple of things which are interesting to me. Number one, the people are rather dark-skinned. They look like Burmese, because that's who they are. But the building material here looks like pretty plain Jane. It is all teak. Teak in America is a very, very expensive wood, but it is everywhere in Myanmar. And so even the most humble of homes or houses would be built with this wood. And you can see the church is going to meet here. We're going to have the Lord's Supper. And you can see no nice padded pews. I've got some better pictures of pews a little bit later that you'll see. These are some of the children who are being taught. And I was on the back of a motorcycle here, and I had a decision to make. Am I going to stay on that motorcycle while this dude goes across that little rickety bridge, or am I going to walk across? Which one do you think I took? Don't answer. But we got across. Well, this is one of my motorcycle pictures. This man is Peter Yeshua. Peter's an interesting young man. He is about in his mid-30s, and he and a woman were in partners together in a business. It was a hobby business. He basically had little motorized cars and drones and things of this type. Big boys' toys, you know. And Peter and I met on social media. He lives in Bali, Indonesia. And I've made 4 or 5 trips to Bali. Sometimes he will come to Singapore to meet me, and we will study there. He is a good student of the Bible. And generally speaking, almost every week, he will write me via some form, either email or social media. And he say, "What about this verse here? I don't understand this." And we will have a little discussion. I ask him, is your partner a Christian? Well, she thinks she's a Christian. Eventually, she became a Christian. And the church in Bali is composed of 2 people. They meet each Lord's Day. They do the same thing we do, except Peter takes the lead in every facet of their meeting. He leads singing. He leads the prayers. He serves the Lord's Supper. He does the Bible teaching every week. Now, in your case, if you're a man, you may participate in a public way how often? Once a week, once a month, etc.? This young man does it every single week. And he is not a paid preacher. In fact, he's sort of an entrepreneur. He has a number of interesting ideas. And by the way, he's no longer in the hobby shop business anymore. But he has a number of interesting ideas about how to make money. But the point that I'm interested in is that he's a good Bible student and he's interested in teaching other people. Well, this picture is from Tanzania. It is in a town called Mbeya, and I'm going to be working with a man that I cannot pronounce his last name, but his first name is Samuel, so we'll just call him Sam. This is where the church meets. Now, you can see Romans 16, 16. You see all these names, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all in English. But when you enter this building, it is a plain Jane building. It has no electricity. But I found an interesting inscription in one of the rafters. "Please silence your cell phone." Well, I work with this group of people, and it's really an interesting thing to go into a place with no electricity. Well, I take that back. There is electricity. You see it right here? This is on the back end of Sam's motorcycle. So every time the church meets, he loads up the generator. He gets everything hooked up. So that there'll be about, I think there are 3 light bulbs that hang from the ceiling. This is where these brethren meet. Now I realize that it is very hard for us to identify with such conditions, but this is the way most people in the world live. We live in a tub of butter, almost literally, compared to the way that other people live. And as a result, most of these people, and I'm not using the term "these people" derogatorily, but most of them think all Americans are rich. Now, we don't perceive ourselves that way, but most of the world perceives even the most humble of us as very rich and wealthy people. And we are. So, I think maybe there were 15 or 20 Christians in this place. I went back to this place, by the way, last year. They have moved from this little building. They now are building their own meeting place. They're meeting in a rented place. And I think we had about 120 people during the time that I met with them last year. This is a very common sight in much of Africa. You knock on the door and you ask, "Do you have time to study the Bible?" And generally speaking, this is the kind of audience you're going to get. Women and children. Now, most of the men are working. I'm not being critical of the men. Don't misunderstand me. But this is a very common way of teaching the Bible. You teach it outside. You sit around maybe for an hour or so and discuss the scriptures. You exchange your pleasantries and then you leave. Sometimes you're invited to come back. But the seed is planted. That's what our job is. When I say our, that's yours and my job. Our job is not to produce results. Our job is to sow the seed. The seed is strong enough to do its own germination, if that's the Lord's will. I planted, Apollos watered, God gave the increase. is how one man put it. Well, this is also in Tanzania. This is up near Mount Kilimanjaro. This is a church building, by the way. You see it? Steeple and all that kind of stuff. No. What you see is you see a tarpaulin here. When it rains, it literally pours. You see all the gaps here? I don't think I've ever seen a building made out of corrugated metal that's supposed to be roofing metal, but it's used for the sides. And by the way, this also makes a good blackboard, by the way. They don't have a blackboard, so I used this corrugated metal to try to do some illustrations with a felt tip pen. And they do have nice benches, don't you think? These are much more comfortable. And this church is maybe composed of 15 or 20 people. Now, there are other congregations of the people of God in the city of Arusha, which is where this picture was taken. But I'm showing this picture in order to emphasize that many of our brethren meet in very humble circumstances. And that's not being critical of them. They're doing the best that they can do. And by the way, there is no electrical power here. Well, let's see. Aha, now we're going to go to India. India is the second place that I would say is the most fertile field in the world for teaching the gospel. There are probably more Christians in India than any other country in the world. Does that surprise you? Well, maybe, maybe not. Most of those Christians meet in relatively small churches scattered throughout the entire country. There are over 1 billion people in India. And India is not as large as the United States geographically. That's a lot of people. And many of those people are your brothers and sisters in Christ. Thousands of them. And they are scattered from north to south. And this is a common way that the Indian women... And by the way, the Indian women always look so nice. The men are slobs, but the Indian women dress very, very well. They dress modestly. The first time that I went to India with Peter McPherson in 1977, we were eating lunch at a place that looked like it used to be a resort, but it had been converted into a restaurant. There's a swimming pool outside. There was not a single woman in that swimming pool. The reason being that they are modest enough to recognize that going into that swimming pool is going to compromise their modesty. Now, a bunch of kids, a bunch of young people, but none of the women. Now, the men, you can see, are very dark skinned. This is in South India. I don't remember exactly where this picture was taken, but their buildings are more substantial, generally speaking, than the places that we've seen thus far. And they are a little bit larger congregationally. I think near this place where I did most of the work on this trip, the numbers would be between 60 and 80 people on the Lord's Day would meet together. And that's a good-sized group. There was a man working with them who was very proficient in English. He was my interpreter. By the way, if you really want to get technical, they are not translators, they are interpreters. A translator is a writer from one language to another. An interpreter is a speaker from one language to another. But I tell you, oftentimes, old people like me get those terms mixed up, so I still may call them a translator. This is kind of an interesting picture. Have you ever seen something like this? Now, this is not Cinderella. This is a chariot that is parked in front of the hotel where I'm staying in India. I'm in a little town called Vizianagaram, which is not too far from the Indian Ocean, the Bay of Bengal. And it just so happened there was a wedding in that building. And as Samson and I are going to go out to go to a village, we see this chariot parked out here. And I said, let's wait a minute. Let's see if they'll come out. Well, sure enough, the couple comes out. I don't have a picture of them. I wish that I did. And they are dressed in traditional Indian wedding garments, which looks like something out of the Arabian Nights. I know Arabia and India are not the same, but the idea is that they were really decked out. And as they were coming out, the bride was speaking English. And somehow or other, we exchanged pleasantries. She said, welcome to India. I said, thank you. Welcome to marriage. And they walked out, and they got into the chariot, and they rode off into the sunset. I just thought that was an interesting thing. That's, weddings are big deals in India. Maybe not so much in America, but it is really an important thing, because guess who pays for all of this? Daddy pays for it. And it is not unusual that the daddy may be a very impoverished farmer, and he is so overwhelmed with the financial expenses of marrying off his daughter that he commits suicide. That is not an unusual thing. To us, that sounds preposterous, but not to them. Well, this picture was taken in Nepal. I've been to Nepal one time, and it was with an Indian man who took me up there. And as you can tell, it's not the winter time, by the way. This is up near the Himalaya Mountains. And I didn't know there were Christians in Nepal, but there were. In fact, there were a number of churches in this area of Nepal where we were. And guess what? They came and they sat and they listened to me, and my words were being interpreted by this brother. And we came about, we believe the same thing. We believe in the same Savior. We believe in the same method of being saved. We believe in the same scriptures. And we were brethren. You have brethren all over the world that you will never meet in this life. And I'm glad that I'm able to meet some of them while we're still on this side of eternity. Now, I know this is an odd picture, but I'm on the back end of a motorcycle. I'm in Karachi. No, I'm sorry, I'm not in Karachi. I'm someplace else. I'm in Bangladesh. And the man who's driving the motorcycle is about my age. And I'm thinking, Robert, can you really drive that thing? The traffic is awful. And I'm just sure we're going to be crushed by some bus. Well, we weren't. But you can see, traffic is terrible. And that's his helmet. Fortunately, he had a helmet for me, too. And the bad thing about this particular place in Bangladesh, and just a little bit of history, at one time, this was called East Pakistan. There was West Pakistan, East Pakistan, when India was subdivided by the British in 1948. Now it is called Bangladesh, which was East Pakistan. West Pakistan is just now plain old Pakistan. But this is an official Muslim country. And there are many, many mosques in that city. The place that we were studying is up on the roof. I think they had a blackboard and maybe a tarpaulin up over the top to shade us from the sun. But unfortunately, about every 3 hours, the muezzin, the Muslim man, would be calling his people to prayer. And it's all over the city. It is a cacophony of sound. You just cannot get a word in edgewise. Oh, I've got to hurry. I'm sorry. This is in, give me a minute, what is in Africa? We'll get more specific in just a minute when I think about where we are. Again, you can see the African women, I'm sorry, need to back up. You can see the African women are dressed very colorfully, and you can see that this lady, now, you don't call that a hat, do you? It's a wrap of some kind. But I found out why many Indian women wear those wraps. It may be for beautification, but most of them carry stuff on their heads. They carry big stuff on their heads. They will carry big buckets of water on their heads with no hands. And they're walking around stately, and that stuff is balanced on the top of their heads. It is amazing. And it is not just in one part of Africa. It's almost all over the continent. This is in the northern part of... You seniors understand this, don't you? Well, I'll tell you in a little bit. I think this is in Zambia. I want you to notice the walls of the building. Now, this is wattle. Wattle is sort of woven reeds and stuff. That's the wall. It's not two by fours, it's wattle, and it's plastered over, which means when it gets wet, there's going to be big trouble. But this is a common form of a church building in many, many parts of Africa. And one of the interesting things is it is segregated. Women sit on one side, men sit on the other side. That's true in India. The only difference is you don't find pews in India. Now, sometimes you will find chairs. Generally, guess who gets the chairs? If you say the women do, you are wrong. The men get the chairs. The women sit on the floor in mats. And usually the children will sit with the women. Now, that's a cultural thing. That is not a theological thing. In 2018, or maybe this is 2017, a brother in Huntsville, Alabama, wrote me and said, would you be interested in going to Kenya? I have an invitation to go to a Pentecostal conference to speak. Would you be interested in going? I said, well, I think I can work that out. And so Daryl and I went to Kenya, and we met with a Pentecostal camp in a Pentecostal campground, and this is the bishop. He and I are about the same age. He lives on site. But we were allowed to teach every day from about 10 o'clock in the morning until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we chose the subject. We were the only two speakers. Now, just imagine that. The bishop is there. He understands English. But we were invited by a young man who just happened to find a website of a church in Huntsville, Alabama, and he began looking at the information and became interested. He took all of their Bible courses, and he invited us to come and to take part in this conference. I thought, well, that's really good. Really great. It was a real experience from a number of perspectives. But here is the best one. The conference began like on a Tuesday. This picture was taken Sunday morning at about 6:30 in the morning. And obviously, I'm asleep at 6 o'clock, and there's banging on my door, and there stands Eric. And Eric says, I want to be baptized. I said, okay, give me a minute. And so I got Daryl and some other people, and we went down to the swimming pool. Now, Eric is a Pentecostal man. He is up in the hierarchy of this conference. But he understood that it was necessary for him to obey the Lord by submitting to immersion for the forgiveness of his sins. As far as I know, that was the only baptism that week. But we really felt that our entire week was worthwhile because of this one man. Well, let's see. This is also in Kenya. This is in a school building. Daryl and I are going to be teaching during the daytime. And I think it is, let's see, I can't see the, it may be this lady right here. This lady, she'd been taking notes, but this note was passed up to the front. And the note said something like this. She says, after we finish, I want to be baptized. We got finished real quick. But there's a problem. Where do you baptize? Would you go down in that? Now, there's no telling what's down there. There are no crocodiles in there. But this is the way that many people are immersed in countryside churches. In a pool of water left over from the rainy season. And when that pool of water is gone, they have a real challenge to find a place to immerse someone. We never think about stuff like that, do we? Because we always have water. But many places do not. This is a stove. How would you ladies like to cook on this stove? You see that? Now, sometimes they use charcoal, and the stove fixture itself is a little bit different for charcoal. Nice pots and pans, I think I can tell you what's in one of those pots. Rice. Rice is everywhere. If you don't like rice, you better take something with you. It just so happens I like. Now, I really like this. I wish we could see this more often. If you want to talk to God, stop. Find a peaceful place and talk to him. If you want to see him, text while you drive. That's in Africa. This is another church building in Africa. By the way, the name of that country is Cameroon. I knew that I would eventually remember that. If you don't know where that is, find you a map. It's in Western Africa. This is an exchange of salary. My salary for working with this church on this day is a chicken. Just so happens this is a rooster, not just a chicken. This is a rooster. I'm staying in a lodge. Now, don't get all excited about the term lodge, because I can assure you the name is misleading. But I'm staying in a lodge, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do with a chicken? In the first place, I've never found a chicken in Africa that's tender. They're all tough. So I said, I'll make a deal with you. You keep the rooster. The rooster's name is Sir Edward the Rooster. You do not eat this rooster. You find this rooster a good hen, so that when I come back next year, I'm going to have a lot of little chickens. I'm going to be in the chicken business. Well, I learned this year, unfortunately, this is in Malawi, I learned this year that a varmint has eaten Sir Edward. But Sir Edward has progeny. He had a son, I'm happy to say. Not all teaching takes place in the church building. This took place outside under, I don't know what this is for, but it's a very common structure. And we met there for about an hour. It's written. And guess what? You see what these ladies are sitting on? This is just a woven mat. Well, this is in Zambia. And this is my room. And this is Amos's room. We stay outside. And they told me that the next day for lunch, we're going to have goat. Now, I'm not sure how I feel about goat, but that's the plan. About 6 o'clock the next morning, I'm in my tent, and I hear this. And there it is, fresh meat. It was delicious. Boys and girls, meat does not come from the meat counter in the grocery store. Meat comes from living animals that are slaughtered and cut up and made possible for you to eat. It's a good source of protein. This gentleman, he's older than I am, if you can believe that. But I have given him something that he's never had before, a Bible. He was ecstatic. Now, can you imagine that? We have so many Bibles, but there are people, many of whom are Christians, who have none. Well, this was taken in Dar es Salaam. This is Edward Smith. We've been working with this church. They have a very nice church building. And this is in Kenya. Now, there's a story here, and this is an amazing story. It could happen only in Africa. I've been invited to come. This is near Lake Victoria. And I've been invited to work with the church for 3-4 days. This is on a Sunday morning. I'm staying in a hotel. And Julius, who is my host, says, I will pick you up at 8:30. I go down to the lobby about 8:25. I'm the only person there. And I sit and I wait. And about 8:30 to 8:35, this very well-dressed man, it wasn't Julius, but it was a nicely dressed young man, came in. And he said, are you ready? I said, yes, I'm ready. So we get in his car, his family's in the car, and we drive off to where I believe is the church building. We got to a praise temple, and there is a band on the stage. And I'm thinking, Julius, what in the world is it? Well, in the first place, that wasn't Julius. In the second place, I'm in the wrong place with the wrong people. But unknown to anybody, they think I'm somebody else. What has happened is this man, who is from North Carolina, is a Pentecostal preacher. We're in the same hotel. He just happens to come down before me in the lobby, and Julius picks him up. and takes him and meets with the brethren. And this other man picks me up and takes me to the praise temple. Well, what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to preach. I preach on truth. And people are looking at me really funny and really strange. They treated me very well. They fed me. But nobody ever said a word to me after it was over. Now, you just think about that. Would that happen in America? Absolutely not. Was it providential? I like to think it was. By the way, I did meet this man. We did not become fast friends. But I did meet him, and we were cordial to each other. But I thought, my, is this for real? Well, it was. This is in Oshawa, South Africa. This is where Paul Williams preaches. And they invited me to come and to spend a week with them. And this obviously this guy is out of place. This redheaded guy is from Florence, Alabama. He is 20 years old. And I asked him, would you like to go to South Africa? And he said, yeah. So surprisingly, he went and he really enjoyed himself. And they enjoyed having him. It was a wonderful experience. If any young man wants to go someplace, you have a passport and you've got some money, sign up. This is in Kilimanjaro. And this is an outdoor Bible study. And this is Mama. This is the daughter, and this is a friend. This friend, by the way, is a Muslim. This is the lady that talked with me for almost an hour, and she said this is baptism, because that's what happened to her. She was sprinkled when she was baptized, or what she thought was baptized. It's interesting, after our conversation, I didn't convince her. It's interesting, she handed me some money. She said, go buy yourself something to drink. Well, it was the equivalent like of $2. It wasn't all that much money. But just think about that. Here is a lady who has studied with you for an hour. You don't agree on the Bible subject, but she is so cordial, she says, go buy yourself a cold drink. She gave us enough money to buy three drinks, one for me and for the two men who were with me. Would that happen in America? I don't think so. Fresh meat. Boys and girls, you see that? It's a wonder you can't see the flies. Whoops, I'm sorry. This is how many, many people live. They don't live with refrigeration. They live with God's refrigeration, just the normal temperatures. Now, this is one of the last slides, so don't get worried. But this is an interesting slide. You see this? This is the top of a Hindu temple. And let's see. We cannot see. There's going to be a baptism here. There's an old woman who decided she would like to be baptized. Well, the only place that we could find to baptize this woman is in this pool of water. And you can see it's not really very clear, not very clean. But this pool of water is water which is used to purify the people who would go into that Hindu temple. You get the picture? Here's a woman who's having her sins washed away by believing and obeying Jesus Christ, and she's doing it in the pool, which is often used with a bunch of pagans. That wouldn't happen in America. The reason I'm telling you this is that there are so many things that take place in our world that we never think about. But think about this old, and I don't use this the word old derogatorily. She probably is not as old as she looks because of where she lives. But she's at least 70 years old, and she wanted to become a Christian. That was her desire. And so she was immersed in this pool of water that these pagan, idolatrous Hindu people would use for their purifying act before going into the temple. So she was made clean in this dirty water. Isn't that amazing? Well, that's it. I'm sorry. I went over by a lot of time, and I'm glad the trap door didn't open. But we're very glad you're here tonight. And I've told you these stories not to amuse you, but rather to show the power that is in the gospel, in the seed of the word of God, to work anywhere in the world where it is planted. If it has been planted in your heart and you are ready to submit to obeying Jesus Christ, you'll have no better time to do it than right now. And you won't have to go into that old dirty water. There's nice, clean, fresh water in this baptistry. But it is not the quality of the water that's going to make you clean. It is the quality of the blood that will cleanse you from sin. Are you ready? If you are, then now's the time to come while we stand and sing.